Disciplined Investor is all about you, your money, and the markets. Sit back and get ready for this edition of the Disciplined Investor Podcast.
This episode of The Disciplined Investor is sponsored by Horowitz & Company. If you're looking for a portfolio manager, look no further. Horowitz & Company, from seed through harvest, cultivating financial success.
Headline bombs are thrashing markets. Markets end the week on a sour note, but we're heading into the end of the quarter on an upbeat note. Small cap growth enters correction status and an important discussion about diversification. All this and much more on episode number 630 of the Disciplined Investor Podcast. Well, welcome again to yet another episode of the Disciplined Investor Podcast. I'm your host, Andrew Horowitz. Thank you, as always, for joining me each and every week as we discuss the world's financial condition, a bit about education, stock markets, the futures markets, whatever is really playing out and creating the most interest on a weekly basis. So we have a lot that is creating interest right now. And in fact, it's kind of getting a little bit old. We have an incredible amount of volatility in the markets, even though we're not seeing a lot of movement in markets. The intraday volatility has been rather dramatic, and this is really being caused by headline bombs, and we'll get to that in a second. I want to first start off and just mention that it's that time of year again, right? Rosh Hashanah is coming, starts Sunday night into Monday, and then the following week or so, it's Yom Kippur, and there's an old adage out there, and the adage goes like this. It says, you know, by the way, just, you know, the sell in May and go away concept. Well, that's what's happening here once again. We've heard this so many times. Sell Rosh Hashanah and buy Yom Kippur. I don't know. Is that going to play out? I think probably because we have so many other reasons to be concerned or elated about the markets, whatever side you're on. And because of the concern about all these different headlines that have been coming out, some expected, some not, that maybe we may not have the same circumstance. But nonetheless, one of those things just to put in the back of your head that is talked about a lot for some reason. It's a seasonably weak period of time, and we could probably come up with all the reasons why that is. But let's get right into it. Start off and really focus in on this whole idea of, man, what is with these headline bombs? You know, I've been having this spat with Frank Curzio. We'll be talking about, it's a healthy and a fun and a friendly spat. We talked about this difference of opinion that I have with regard to the China talks and the trade war and the issues that are going on around the world. You know, on his side, he believes that China has much more to lose. And in this trade war, when we look at what's happening to the Chinese economy from all the tariffs and the slowdown that has been occurring around the world, they are really suffering in a much greater way than we are. Obviously, we have a much greater amount of potential that we can hurt them with. We have all sorts of, our economy is a lot bigger. They rely on us a lot more than we rely on them. So I understand that. He also believes the USA has the upper hand. So on one side, I do believe and agree with Frank in the whole area that, yeah, they have a lot more to lose. The question is, who is willing to take these losses? And who is willing to really go longer and have a lot more pain and misery when it comes to the economy than the other side? And my contention is that while some of this is true, we have a lot to lose as well. Here's the thing. I mean, I think that when we look at how this entire process is being conducted, and whether or not you believe that, yeah, we need to have tariffs on China at this point or some kind of a deal that prevents them from doing all these bad things to us. And we know the list. We talked about the intellectual property. We've talked about the technology stealing, lack of transparency, the government there helping their companies with lack of buying and offsetting of deficits. And we've talked about all this many times. But the way that we are going about trying to get them to yield, the way that we're doing this arm twisting, the punch in the face, the punch in the gut, the constant surprises, the double talk, we have a deal that looks like it's going to happen and not. We're going to have a meeting, but yet all of a sudden we put on more tariffs. We have a group that comes here to talk, tell them to go home, or they decided to go home before they visited the Midwest and the farmlands. All of this, I think, is a really poor way and is being conceived in a way that's very detrimental to getting anything done. That's my problem. Yeah, we're hitting China's economy directly. I mean, smack right in the middle of their economy. We're hitting them really hard and hoping that by doing so, by inflicting economic pain, we're going to make them change their ways. We're getting into some of the ideas that we want them to change how their government and their companies work. We're really involved in areas that possibly we shouldn't be. But the other parts of the question, the areas that we want to change to make it a much fairer trading relationship, aside from the fact that we don't want them stealing our goods, our intellectual property, our technology, of course, that's obvious. But even though this whole trade war seems to be going pretty well for us, the question I have to ask is, why are we continuing to slap them in the face, hit them in the back of the head on a regular basis? And I guess this week probably encapsulates that question and makes me ponder it even more and think that what is the impetus for our government or the White House or this administration or Trump or whoever's making who's bringing these ideas to light to do what they're doing? Because we were supposedly having some good words from China midweek about, you know, we had some really good dialogue and we've decided, yes, we're going to increase our buying of agricultural products as a show of good faith. And we had a date that was set for October 10th for the next talks that were going to be taking place and negotiations and framework and all the things that go on and on about how this is progressing. We had comments from President Trump this week that said, you know, the China deal is closer than you think. And on each one of these positive mentions about the trade war, markets seem to react pretty in a good way. And then all of a sudden, we get this. The White House is weighing some curbs on U.S. investments in China. And these discussions include the possibility of blocking all U.S. financial investments in Chinese companies. Now, the report from CNBC says it's in the preliminary stages and nothing has been decided, but there's also no time for an implementation of this, but this is something that kind of popped up. Midday on Friday, markets took just a beating. Bloomberg then came out with a report, and they said, of course, the same thing, that the administration was going to be considering ways to limit U.S. investors' portfolio flows into China, including delisting Chinese companies from American stock exchanges and preventing U.S. government pensions and the pension funds and the monies from investing in the Chinese markets. Whoa, wait a second. Wait a second. I thought we were involved. I thought this was a trade war, not a financial war. But now this is morphing. And this is on the heels of what seemed to be a breakthrough to a degree that we're getting back to the table. And once we've seen this before. This has played out a couple of times, very similar to what's happening right now. Whereas we had a little bit of a, I would say that there was a breakthrough to a degree, nothing major, but a breakthrough that, okay, we're getting back to the table. And China says, you know what, we're going to do something. You alleviate some tariffs. We'll alleviate some tariffs. We'll waive some of these. We'll postpone some of these. And all of a sudden, you remember when President Trump decided overnight, out of nowhere, just to increase tariffs on China? Right ahead of the meeting that was supposed to take place? So, I mean, what is this all about? This is on a Friday. This happened on a Friday. Days, just days before China's markets closed for the Golden Week, which is October 1st through the 7th. So by the time this deal ends, right, by the time their markets are closed and reopened, it's going to be just days before the October 10th talks. And now the Chinese are going to have a bad taste in their mouth. Their market's probably going to have a pretty good dipsy doodle. We saw that there was a big move on Chinese stocks. I don't understand the sense in this. I just can't for the life of me understand where there's any good level of negotiation going on, goodwill or good spirited negotiation. It seems to me that you have somebody in the corner, you punch them, they're down on the mat for a while. Now you're stepping all over them, kicking them. And on top of that, you're kidney punching them. And you are, even after they start saying, you know what, okay, let's take just a breather, and both sides agree to take a breather. You get back in the ring and you touch gloves. And then before the ref can tell you to start going or the bell rings, you do a sucker punch. We're sucker punching them. And you may be like, you know what? Good. They are not yielding to what we're saying, and they're probably going to push this further and all that. We have to get more serious and hurt them even more. But I'm telling you something. While I agree with the basic tenets of why we're doing this, the way we're doing this, the rest of the world is watching. This is all happening in real time. Do you think anybody's going to really trust the United States right now to do business with them? The way that we are treating another country? Whether or not this country is somebody who has stolen stuff from us, but still, you know, we could be doing this on a systematic basis with a plan instead of constant escalations after they have come back to the table. It makes no sense to me. This foot on the neck pressure, especially just days before a new negotiation happens. It's not good faith. It doesn't look good. The Chinese stocks in the markets that are traded on the U.S. markets on Friday, listen to this, Alibaba down 5%, Weibo down 4%, Huya down 10, Momo down 7, list goes on, JD.com down 6, Vipshop down 4, Tencent down 3, Ctrip down 3. I mean, just something doesn't fit right and feel right on the way we're treating this process. And it doesn't seem to me that there is anything more than the continuation of, hey, let's hit them hard. Markets are going to get worried. Let's throw out there some kind of dangling opportunity that makes it look like the deal's going to get done sooner than later. And then nothing happens. The reality is, I think we all have come to the understanding and belief that this China trade talk, trade war, now financial war, is probably going to extend into the elections. And by providing bad will with the negotiation process, it doesn't seem to me that China is really going to be ingratiated to really coming in a good faith effort back to us if every time they do, we just keep on sucker punching them. It's a sucker punch. And again, I'm going to mention this because you need to be clear. I think that we are right to focus in on the items that have been inequitable between these two trading partners, USA and China. Clearly, no question about that at all. But again, the process and way we're doing it, it's like a mob boss going after, you know, going to break your arms, break your legs, and then if that doesn't work, I'm going to kill your whole family. I mean, that's what it looks like to me. So let's see how this plays out. But right now, it appears to me that there is going to be some extreme potential problems if this does really start spinning out of control, particularly into next week. And if China decides to back out of the trade talks, or if in fact they reciprocate somehow with other financial you know, some kind of financial reciprocation of, I don't know what they can do. Maybe holding off on treasury bonds buying, or you know, even though we know they have to buy some, possibly dropping their currency further. That would be something they probably will be doing. But by getting so deep in this, I don't think our markets are going to be too pleased. And the problem is, if they close the doors on working with them or raise tariffs or do something else to cause harm to the companies that we have here working there, that could be a problem. How about they just cut off Apple? They just cut off Apple from selling in their country. I mean, Google is pretty much cut off. It is. Facebook is cut off. They have been forever. So maybe they'll just go start thinking about cutting off some of our companies doing business in China. They can do that. It's not a free and open economic market like ours is here. It's not an open market. They can just freely turn something on and off. Think about it. If you do want to comment back to me, tell me you agree with me or I'm full of it. Maybe you think that Frank's right in this whole thing and I have no idea what I'm talking about. Or you just want to ask me a question, go over to thedisciplinedinvestor.com and click on the Ask Andrew button and send me your comments, your concerns, your agreements, your love, or even your hate. It's all good. Send it on over there at thedisciplinedinvestor.com. All right. So the main thing I want to talk about today was the whole idea about diversification. This is kind of rolling back a little bit, the idea of really focusing in on markets or really focusing in on any specific item regarding the economic numbers and outlook and what I think. I want to kind of go back. I want to get back to basics just for a minute here and talk about the whole idea of diversification. Now, I don't want to talk about your ordinary diversification. We know basically what that is, but we'll cover that too. I'm going to try to focus in on something that I look at called style diversification. And if you've been listening to me for a while and you've been reading what we write, you've been kind of around and understand who I am and what I do, you probably heard me talk about this metaphor about a flower garden. And I came up with this when I wrote my first book, The Disciplined Investor, Essential Strategies for Success. Here comes a plug. You can get it on audiobooks at audible.com over at Amazon. So just pick that up if you want. But when I was coming up with trying to give a very basic lesson into the idea of what is diversification, how can you really view this and understand this? Because diversification is not necessarily the whole idea of having a lot of stuff. Right? A lot of people think, well, diversification is just, look at my portfolio. Look how I got 25 or 30 different things in there. And I got a house and I got a couple other things here. I'm diversified. Yeah, I'm pretty good. But I tried to make it clear that that's not necessarily what diversification is. And what I believed was a really good way to diversify a portfolio. So this whole flower garden metaphor it goes something like this. Essentially, when you think of your overall portfolio, we want to think of it in regard to a diversified platform that has a lot of different things in it, or a few. The number is not really the issue there, but let's think of it like a flower garden. And there are those flower gardens out there, you've seen them. They look great for a while. You know, you're driving by somebody's house and, wow, look at that. And then you come back a couple months later, like, what happened? Or maybe even it's yours. Maybe yours. You're like, oh, look how beautiful our stuff looks for these months. And then it just, you know, it's gone. Just everything dies off. There's a guy around the corner from me and he has, during certain seasons in Florida, different than other areas around the country, you plant these in patience and they grow beautifully in their color. They're great and they're just dynamite. But the problem with impatience is that they bloom and then they die. When they bloom, they look magical. Everything is great. When they die, it's just like these creepy stems that are left everywhere and just kind of dissolve eventually into the earth. They have a short lifespan, and they don't like extreme cold or hot weather. Oftentimes, you're going to plant those up north in the summer, and we plant those in the winter down here in Florida. Now, on the other hand, there's another kind of garden, and this is kind of got the guy around the corner who has many different flowers and shrubs and things that are going on inside of his garden. It's a nice couple they have. I don't even know all the things they have in their garden. It's incredible. But things like, yes, impatiens during certain seasons. And they have hibiscus. They have roses. They have evergreen bushes. They have heliconia and tulips, daisies. What else they have? Well, that's good. They have some of that ground cover that covers a bunch of the areas. It kind of creeps along the ground and covers the whole ground. And what's interesting to this and how we relate this to a well-diversified portfolio is that something in their garden is always in bloom. They kind of did a really good job at planning, to understanding what flowers will bloom in what season. And what happens there is that essentially, even in the worst case of all worst cases, they have a bunch of these evergreens that are always green, right? Evergreen, always green. So whether it's a really cold spell or a season that maybe some of these things don't bloom very well, but they have maybe not a lot of flowers, but still they're in bloom and they have leaves, versus impatiens that are dead and stems and just rotting in the ground. They have a few things that are blooming, and then that maybe dies out a little bit, and there's something else that comes up. But basically, something essentially is always in bloom. And now you have to relate this back to your portfolio. So the first garden, the first that had these beautiful impatiens that were just looking spectacular when they were in bloom, colors everywhere, that just died off. And this is kind of like a portfolio that maybe is concentrated in one sector. And maybe could be like a few stocks in a particular area of technology or healthcare, or, you know, maybe just utilities. And during the good times, that portfolio pretty much had good returns when things were going along the way it's supposed to go. And it looks just, I mean, like it could do no wrong. I mean, I found the magical pill here. Look at this portfolio. I mean, it's been riding up over the last 3 years, hardly any downturn. The problem is that during other times when those positions are out of favor, not so good. A lot of pain, a lot of questioning. Oh my God, what did I do? Should I sell these things? What do I do? Should I buy more? Should I buy the dip? My portfolio is down a chunk. What do I do at this point? Oh, I should have never invested in that stock. It was good for a while. I wanted to sell. I remember wanting to sell, but I didn't sell. I should have taken it. Oh, that guy told me to get out of that position. I should have realized that they didn't have earnings, but yet they were just riding up. You know the stories you tell yourself. Now, the couple's garden that has the stuff that's blooming all the time is kind of like a well-rounded and diversified portfolio. That is what I'm talking about. That's diversification. And that portfolio may look something like this. You may have some stocks that are spread across sectors. You may have some ETFs and some mutual funds. You may have some bonds. Maybe some alternative investment strategies, commodities, evergreens like money markets. You know, that they're not going to go down in bad times. It's not going to really go up at all either in good times. But they're going to be there like the evergreen, just kind of like hanging out, just doing its thing. You get the picture. I mean, this is basically a much broader base. Even if you had 20 different stocks like the undiversified portfolio that somebody says, well, it's diversified, I have 20 stocks. Well, maybe not. First of all, you're in one asset class. So therefore, you're not diversified. Second of all, well, you may have exposure to many different sectors. You may have concentration as well. Whereas if you have all these other types of investments, the alternative investments, the commodities and all that, there is probably going to be a much greater level of diversification. Now, you have to say, but Andrew, if I'm so diversified, can I make money? Well, if in the first portfolio you're getting some great returns, but then you have some major downfalls, and in the other one you have, you know, ups and smaller downs and ups, but you're kind of creeping higher over time, maybe the end product is the same, but you didn't have to weather all that nastiness during very difficult times in markets. But the issue still is, how do you know if your portfolio is diversified? And it's really hard to do unless you do a real deep dive, because even if you have a lot of different mutual funds in there that have a lot of different names, for example, or a lot of ETFs that say, you know, large cap, mid cap, and international, there could be a lot of, at the same, you know, this overlap. We've seen this before where you have mutual funds that seem to be much different than the other, but yet at the same time, the top 10 holdings have a 30% overlap. And you didn't do anything really beneficial for yourself besides just get more of the same. Unknowingly, because it seemed to be that the title and name and description of that particular investment seemed to be, you know, seemed to be different than the other. But unless you do this kind of deep dive, understanding what the holdings are inside of it, you can have this problem. And it's something I think it's a good time to take a look at this. Take a look at what the holdings are. You can get this information from a variety of different websites. And especially if we're going to be entering into a time of heightened volatility. Now, that's up for question right now. Whether or not we are going to be or not in a time of a little bit excess volatility, whether by the end of the year things just kind of play out and everything's happy. But you know what? We're ending the third year of a presidential election. The fourth year is a little bit more, less kind often on a seasonal basis. We have this overhang of all the things we've talked about, and we're approaching earnings season where already we've seen several companies like Micron and FedEx really talk about this whole trade situation as really heavily weighing on their earnings and their outlook. And one of the mistakes that people make over time is, as trends continue and as they get hot, they hop on. They chase that return. They chase that trend. And they load up. And they forget about an exit plan. They totally forget about the idea of, all right, I bought this stock for this reason. And if in fact it goes in my direction, that's great. I believe in management. I believe in their products. But what if all of a sudden things change? The thesis changes. Do you change along with it? Think about that for a second. The thesis changes. Probably one of the best recent examples of this is Roku, possibly Netflix. But Roku's kind of interesting. They have the set-top box, and they're doing all the streaming and all that. But you know what? Several companies have been recently coming out with a competitive product, which really will put some pressure on Roku. The stock goes from, I don't know, the 170s down to 100. You may say, I really like Roku. Well, you liked Roku when there was no competition out there. Do you still like Roku now? Can Roku continue battling all this competition when they didn't have any really before to speak of? And is your thesis still intact? If it is, well, that's great. But if it isn't, did you ever revisit that? You know, even when it comes to broad market sectors, you know, I wanted to invest in, let's pick something here. Emerging market stocks. And I like emerging market stocks because I think there is an opportunity for blah, 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 fill in the blanks. And that's the thesis, right? You come up with this thesis and you say, okay, I'll go along with that. Emerging market stocks do well for a while. And then all of a sudden we see that there's a change in the thesis. Again, we're making this up. Well, a lot of these trade wars are really starting to hurt many of these small countries. The dollar is rising and the emerging markets are really not doing well and their currencies aren't doing well with that. And on top of that, we have a bit of a more protectionist style of government economics going on right now. And that may hurt the emerging markets. I'm making this up. I'm not saying that's true, but I'm making it up. Is the thesis still intact? And if your answer is no, well, you got to change. But a lot of people invest and forget it. They just invest and they say, you know what? This is what I'm doing. This is what I decided to do. And they're paralyzed into making a change. It was so difficult to get to that point of putting your money in play on that particular investment that it's just hard to even deal with the thought that, number one, I was wrong. Number two, there's a change. And number three, what if I was wrong and I pull it out and then it goes up? I'm going to feel really bad about it. You know what I'm talking about. Come on. Come on. You know what I'm saying. You've had this happen to you. Yes. I see you shaking your head. Okay? So, unless you're a buy and hold forever type of player, I mean, I think you need a plan. Essentially, you know, when you have a concentrated portfolio, especially, you need to really think about, okay, what's my exit plan? Am I going to think about any kind of 6-month review or annual review or whatever you're doing? Or am I going to come up with maybe a plan of action that if, in fact, I am not right with my thesis, then I'm going to make sure that I don't get, you know, crunched by this. Some people do things like, you know, I'm going to invest, but I'm going to limit my downside. If in fact there is a 10% drawdown in this particular idea, I'm going to get out. Maybe like an automatic stop. Some people use things like soft stops that are based on technical analysis. Well, if it goes below the 50-day average, I'll sell half of it. If it goes below the 200-day moving average, I'll sell the other half. Or on the other hand, some people say they'll buy on the 50-day and buy on the 200-day. Whatever you're thinking about, do me a favor. Don't be the person that just simply just flies by the seat of their pants, okay? You know what I'm talking about. And tries to feel when is a good time to get in or out. I feel like things are overvalued. I feel like things are undervalued. I feel like, wow, boy, I don't like that stock because of its name or what it sells. It doesn't feel good to me. I mean, this could be probably the worst kind of investment process when you have emotions that get involved in any kind of good decision making, and you then have this whole idea that I'm going to do it to what makes me feel good or bad. You're going to end up sabotaging yourself left and right, because what's going to happen is during times that are good, you're going to get euphoric. You know? Wow. You're going to obviously get too confident and cocky. Oh, look at me. I'm going to tell everybody how much I made on this stock. I'm not going to talk about what I lost, but I'm going to tell everybody what I made on this stock. We call that the golf club conversation. I can't tell you how many times I play golf and I get to the green and somebody gives me a little nudge. Hey, boy, I made, on that stock, I made 122% in the last week and a half. Somehow, never on the green do I hear, you know, I just lost 23% on that stock. I mean, it never happens. So don't get caught up in your own mind-twisting process of thinking that this is all about feeling and making yourself look good. And then all of a sudden, when things aren't good, not getting out because you're too proud to admit that you're wrong, and then thinking that, you know, it will just come back. It may. But let's just think about all the stocks that didn't. And let's see what's happening right now with many of these IPOs that recently came out that are underwater or not even being pulled into the public markets because of lack of earnings. It's not 1999 all over again, but it's a little weird, all these companies that basically aren't earning money that get significant premiums based on some multiple and valuation that's been made up out of nowhere. Again, we've seen this before. You could take the ride up, but be careful. You don't want to take the full ride down. And then the problem comes in, even if you do sell, this is a sticky one. Even if you do sell, when then do you redeploy the assets? Because if you had the mindset that, hey, I'm going to take a 10% stop on that, and let's just pretend for a moment and make up the scenario that everything is stopped out. Every single investment that you have has stopped out, and now you're all in cash. Well, when do you actually redeploy and when do you actually then go back into the markets and invest that money again? It's going to be very difficult to do so because you now have a concern that maybe markets are going to fall a little bit harder. I just got beat up a little bit. So these are problems. Is there a solution to all of this? You know, where am I going with this, right? Where is there a solution? The solution is to have a plan of action. If you sell and you're going to utilize a stop, when is it that you're going to buy back in? And what are you going to use as your criteria? If you buy, what is the point that I get out or not? Add on to the position or not? So this is a big problem with tightly concentrated portfolios and understanding that a lot of times you'll have really good runs and then there'll be that understandable rotation that happens on a regular basis with markets that things just get out of favor. And another problem, and really the heart of the discussion as we get through all this, and I wanted to kind of set you up for this, is that many portfolios don't have style diversification. Style diversification. And really, I want to focus on this. Because even if you have what is traditionally known as a well-diversified portfolio, you know, the ones that cover all the different sectors that are out there, that are in some bonds as well, and you have some individual stocks maybe, and you have some commodities, all of the things you're gonna have in there. The problem is that for the most part, there's a similar trading style that is used. And how many people really have a specified alternative asset in their portfolio that's devoted to alternative assets or alternative trading? And what do I mean by that? So most assets that you have and most positions that are out there are going to pretty much be a buy and hold, index-based, sector-based. I'm investing in this sector. I'm investing in this stock. I'm investing in this way. I'm investing in this particular instrument. And oftentimes, most of those are buy and hold, and you got to run up with the good times and down with the bad times. And if you're in bonds, you get the same thing. But still, you know, maybe a ETF is more of a index-based, and maybe a mutual fund, an actively traded mutual fund, is a little bit more of a manager-overseen investment that is more actively managed. But most investors, when they invest, are going to be in individual stocks for the long haul. They're going to be in ETFs. They're going to be in mutual funds. And most hold through thick and thin. But during the toughest times, what do? The main thing they do, their action, what do they do in response to this? They lose sleep and have anxiety. And the buy and hold works in markets that are clearly trending higher and those that are moving higher in, you know, over time. But when you have alternative trading strategies and styles in a portfolio, you can possibly create a buffer with this one sector. Now, if you are, let's just take a pie and say it's at 100% and these are all your investments, how much do you put into alternative trading styles? Well, maybe 5 or 10%, maybe 15%, depending on your risks, you know, your risk and your time horizon and all that. And this is specifically why we developed the TDI Managed Growth Strategy, because we saw there was a major missing component in portfolios. And for those of you that have been listening to me for a while, you know what I'm talking about here, right? So what we do is we have a portfolio that we created that has a core stock positions in it. So that's one trading style. We rotate those stocks on a quarterly basis. And we have another part of the portfolio and the strategy that's a trading style. So that utilizes intraday trading or day trading, swing trading. We have another part of the portfolio that's dedicated to the potential of hedging out risk, either fully or partially or not. And you get a much different process with an alternative trading style and a trading strategy than just simply having a buy and hold of a sector. And we rotate these stocks, for example, on a quarterly basis. And we use hedging in there to offset risk in certain conditions of the market. And we trade intraday and try to pick up either something that's happening from a news-driven source, or possibly even hedge out some risk on, you know, some item that's happening, or look for an opportunity where this competition coming in and short or go long a particular security. So we may go against the grain of the markets that traditionally is long only. And so I hope this makes sense so far, right? You're getting the idea. And the problem is with the diversification with traditional investments, it's you want to be able to find somewhere to dampen your risk. And there's only so much that could be done with a traditional diversification. And by adding alternative strategies, again, ones that could either go against the grain or hedge out some risk, it's expanding your diversification even further. Now, we always tell people the TDI managed growth strategy is not to be compared with a S&P 500 ETF. It's not. It's not what it is. It's a long, short style. It mixes up and blends in some trading styles. And that gives you another component that most people don't have. And yeah, it's an aggressive strategy. And no, the goal is not to hit the ball out of the park or the skin off the ball. And we have this process of a quantitative filtering and a fundamental screen to uncover companies that meet a very strict criteria. And what's really interesting about this is that over the last quarter, we saw a major drop in equity exposure in the portfolio because companies were not able to meet the criteria. And we have a natural and a rather holistic process in there that necessitates us to hold back security investments dependent on the number of companies that can actually get over the hurdle of our requirements for earnings growth and revenue growth and ROE levels and margin expansion and a whole host of other things. And what's interesting, this whole volatility that we recently saw and the drop that we saw in August, our portfolio right now is only about 15 to 20% net long on an average basis. We may actually increase that depending on day trades, swing trades, and things like that. But generally speaking, just the portfolio itself, because of the hedges and because of the equity exposure that has been reduced, only about 15 to 20% net long. And therefore, those days that we've had those major drops in the market, it wasn't really a problem. Now, of course, we didn't get any much of the upside there either. But think about this for a second. Now we've added, for our clients, we've added a outside type of kind of off the rack, not out of the box, but kind of an alternative strategy to try to add some further diversification. And this holistic approach that we have for aligning equity value, equity investment with all these factors really creates a natural expansion and contraction of how much equity exposure we have. And the point when you hear the word factor, and we look at factors, well, one of the factors that most people don't include in their portfolio is the idea of having a trading portfolio, especially in a time where everybody's talking about,
hey, you got to have the cheapest ETF out there, no matter what the return is. And listen, leave these very interesting, but yet, I think, uneducated comments. Even though I agree with ETFs, we use ETFs a lot. It's not the only thing you should have in your portfolio, because again, those preaching utilizing ETFs in a diversified portfolio are missing a whole lot. They're missing the fact on the reports that we've done over and over about how fixed income investments do better in mutual funds and active management, or I should say active management, than we have found they do in ETFs. Inefficient markets shouldn't be in ETFs the way we see it. Mutual funds, while they may be more expensive, it's not all about the cost. It's all about the return, net of cost, and more importantly, risk-adjusted return. And beyond that, where does this fit in my portfolio? Is this an area that we should be including because it adds diversification to my portfolio? Or is it just the same old thing we have in this sector, and what's the point? So really today, I really want to focus in. I think it's a really good time of year as we're coming into the final quarter of the year, fourth quarter of 2019, the end of the year. I think it's a really good time to reflect and to reassess. I think it's a good time to really consider, okay, we had a good run this year, much above in the markets, much above long-term averages. And is there a reason now that I should really be considering thinking about, you know, how is my portfolio looking? What is my total allocation looking like right now? Did I expand too much in any particular sector? Am I too heavily weighted and concentrated? And if so, remember that everything rotates over time. While the market expansion can continue on for some time, it does seem like we're getting towards a point of earnings slowing to a level that doesn't justify some of the valuations that we have. And whether or not that means just a quick correction, maybe in a recession 6 to 12 months from now, that may in fact get in the way of returns, and then, you know, we're off back to the races again, or something worse or something better. I'm not trying to have a crystal ball here. What I'm trying to say to you is that we've been through this many times. I've been doing this a long time. The fact is, I've seen the emotional upheaval that happens when things don't go right, and then people bust up their portfolios and never get back into where they should be again. You probably had this happen to you. When we were getting beat up back in 2009, 2008, 2010, and then a couple of times throughout, maybe even the end of last year, some people destroyed their portfolios and they never got back in. Others decided, you know what? I'm never going to get out. I'm never getting out. And that's all there is to it. Well, that's fine. That's all good. But there's others that like to sleep at night, not liking to go through the whole entire process of the highs and lows and ups and downs and pain to euphoria. There's a lot of alternative investments out there, and we use some of them in our portfolios as well, other than the TDI Managed Growth Strategy. But just something I wanted you to think about to try to really open up your minds to the idea that there are different ways to invest, and that is adding another dimension to your portfolio diversification. And if nothing else you got from this discussion here today, I want you to take home, think about, and do something about taking a look and a deep dive into your portfolio to understand better about how you are, in fact, diversified. And if at the end of that process, you say, I'm okay with what I have, no matter what it is, that's great. But don't just sit by making some assumptions saying, okay, I think I'm okay. I'm really not sure. Maybe I am, but maybe I'm not. I don't know. Well, who knows? I don't know if I could do this. Just let it sit. Who cares? That's not what you should be doing. If you're listening to this show and you've been listening for some time, do something about it. Make it happen. Or find somebody out there that can help you with it. Find a professional that can really give you good insight and analysis on this. We constantly review portfolios for our clients and make sure that they're not only diversified, but in the areas we want to be in. We do rebalancing of portfolios on a regular basis when it's necessary, not just because, oh, on a whim, it should be done. But you need to do the same thing for yourself. And if your advisor is not doing that for you, now, they may be doing it in the background. We don't always tell our clients that we did a review and we're okay with it, you know, until something is needed to be kind of communicated back and forth. But your advisor may be doing it or may not be. And if your advisor is just giving you a couple of tips here and there and ideas and not really managing the whole portfolio, maybe you should consider getting a second opinion and figuring out, well, maybe I need to look at this. People do it, you know, in this profession, they do reviews of portfolios, and some will charge you for that. Most, you know, will take a look and give you some ideas. It's time to do it. And that's really what I want to focus in on today. I really want to focus in on the idea. I think it's really good timing at the end of the third quarter, entering into the fourth quarter, entering to the end of the year, time to really reassess, relook, and reevaluate. And again, maybe do nothing in the end, but have the satisfaction that you did look at this and you did the due diligence to make sure that you are on proper footing for your future. And with that, we're going to end it for this week. I wish everybody a happy new year who's celebrating Rosh Hashanah. And we'll be this week with DH Unplugged. Yes, we'll be on John C. Dvorak and myself on Tuesday evening. We'll talk about some great things. I got a lot of things lined up for this show this week. DHUnplugged.com. You can find it on your Apple Podcasts or any other podcast directory. Also, you can find ours. Make sure to tell your friends about us. Follow me on Twitter, Andrew Horowitz, one word. You get the first updates of when these podcasts are posted. And with that, I will see you next week. Nothing discussed in this podcast should be considered a recommendation to buy or sell any security. Past performance is no indication of future results. In addition, the information presented is not intended to be used as the sole basis of any investment decisions, nor should be construed as advice designed to meet the individual needs of any particular investor. Nothing herein constitutes legal, accounting, or tax advice, or individually tailored investment advice. Remember, investing involves substantial risk. Past performance is not a guarantee of future results, and a loss of original capital may occur. No one receiving or accessing this information should make any investment decision without first consulting his or her own personal financial advisor and conducting his or her own research and due diligence, including carefully reviewing any applicable prospectuses, press releases, reports, and other public filings of the issuer of any securities being considered. Please consider this for educational purposes only. As always, use your best judgment when investing. Horowitz & Company, Inc. is registered as an investment advisor with the state of Florida and conducts business in other states where it is properly registered or is excluded from registration requirements. Registration does not imply any level of skill or training.